You are acquainted with the factors, which were written here in London over 2 years ago. Nothing in the factors has actually been changed, but the direction of the material itself has been changed. An intention has therefore altered, and I have not decided at this time whether or not I shall ever put this in writing. Because it is so obviously, at first glance, and with a superficial inspection, an invalidation of everything man is doing, that it could not be received by him without considerable preparation, experience, and practice, without giving him some of the oddest ideas and sending him off on some of the more unworthy ambitions and validating for him all of his more unscrupulous acts. And I think you will agree when I tell you this that this would be the case. I've spent about 25 years in research and investigation in the field of the mind. And never at one time did I suspect why it had never been solved. And I know now why the field of the human mind was never solved. This is quite a thing to know. Great oddity. The barrier which lay between man and an understanding of man consisted of two items only. And item one was I don't know, and item two was no idea. And these two things are the clue to a complete understanding of the mind. And so naturally, the problems of the mind were never solved because they depended upon an understanding completely of the ununderstandable thing I don't know, and an entire and complete understanding of no idea. This is incredible. We have a bridge here, a barrier, which could have been a bridge, which was never crossed. And it was never crossed because the name of the bridge was I don't know and no idea. To know about something, one had to not know about it. And this was an incomprehensibility sufficient to involve all the philosophers of all ages of which we have any record. And why there is no written rendition on the subject of the mind which is entirely articulate anywhere in the race. Because to understand the mind, you had to understand not knowing about the mind. And to understand the source and idea of ideas, you had to understand no idea. And the moment that you began to research arduously into the field of the mind, you would sooner or later run into I don't know. And the sooner you started to examine ideas, you would run into no idea. Dialectic materialism has run into no idea. They are now dramatizing the answer to a workable philosophy. But as long as they dramatize it and don't know it, it is entirely unworkable. Dialectic materialism tells us that all new ideas are the resultant of two old forces. This is very cute. It just tells you that there's no slightest possibility of ever getting an original idea. The chap who invented this, not quite a century ago, was evidently trying to protect an idea. And the idea he was trying to protect was probably communism. But let me call to your attention that if all communists believed completely in dialectic materialism, they would never believe the one thing which would eventually destroy them. And that is that no one will ever get an idea better than communism. They have sought to put out a philosophy which would debar anybody from thinking up anything better than communism. And now we find communism in the silly situation of having so thoroughly invalid, outdated capitalism, and capitalism in the silly situation of having so thoroughly invalidated communism that no one really believes in either one unless he is intimately a capitalist or intimately a communist. The rest of the world is left as spectators to watch a dogfight which was over some time ago. And there's nothing more uninteresting than yesterday's dogfights. Business has borrowed the best principles of communism and capitalism alike. And even communism in practice has borrowed the best principles out of economic capitalism. And we discover them both without a pure cause, because they have dramatized themselves, dialectic materialism. And they don't know they're over and dead and done. They're yesterday's news. The most pathetic thing I ever saw in my life was yesterday afternoon in Hyde Park. A communist orator carrying forward grandly and gloriously and being heckled by somebody in the crowd who was talking about a cooperative. As to whether or not this cooperative was a communist thing or a capitalist thing, the communist had no answer. There is no pat answer left. When we have merged communism and capitalism so thoroughly, taking the best parts of each, that we have destroyed or eaten up both of them. And now this new thing asks the question of communism. What is communism? What is capitalism? And finds something in each native to itself, and so can't fight with either one, and can't agree with either one. You get this oddity? You get what could occur. But that is dialectic materialism in practice, which would result in a sort of a dramatization of no idea. Look, the communists might have protected communism by saying that no new ideas are possible. Do you realize all of science has picked up this war cry? You start talking to a nuclear physicist today, and he will tell you, the first thing he will tell you is that it's all been done before. The worst thing that a writer could possibly do is to hang around a crowd of scientists, because the only thing they're sold on, if they're sold on anything, is the constant speed of light, which doesn't happen to be right, and that nothing is new. Evidently, science itself has bought this thing called dialectic materialism so thoroughly it is entirely gorged upon it. And because it believes then that no new ideas will arise, it, science, and it, communism, will be eventually destroyed. Because they have put up a blind spot to the one point of danger. But somebody will come along someday and dash off a new political philosophy, which is entirely, completely removed from communism, capitalism, and science, all of which are well removed from new ideas. And these cults will simply go down to dust. They will never even know that a new idea has occurred, because their first teaching is that no new idea can occur. This is not an ideological slant I'm giving you. I'm merely giving you this as a modern example of this thing called no idea. The dramatization of this thing called no idea has resulted in the involvement of a political philosophy which now governs over 1/6 of the people of Earth, communism, and something to which the remainder, as apparently, aside from a few barbaric tribes, entirely dedicated to science. And this whole view is doing a dramatization of no idea. But a preclear can dramatize endlessly a neurosis without recovering. Remember that. He can sometimes simply know about it and recover from it instantly. Do you get that? There is a difference, then, of cognition between a dramatization and a knowingness. Now, we look this over carefully, and we discover that if somebody dramatizes something, there must have been, at one time or another, a postulate or consideration to that effect, which then got so solid that it could be dramatized. And that every dramatization, somewhere on the track, must have been an articulate consideration or postulate. Now, we know this inherently. We know that this person who is sick will protest to us that he has never made a decision to be ill. And an examination of his track will demonstrate to us continuous postulates that he should be ill, made when he was well. He's now dramatizing these postulates. They are below his cognition level. We have all some experience with this. Most people will say, well, I never made a postulate to be ill. And you say, how about staying home from school? And the fellow says, oh, well, gooey, oh, well, I forgot about that. Now, therefore, another principle emerges to our view. And that is this principle, that things begin with a consideration or postulate and end with a solidity. It is not necessarily true that all postulates and considerations become solid. But it is true that postulates and considerations can become solid. And when they become solid, they become what we call a dramatization or even a solid reality. And all solid realities are apparently dramatizations of a consideration or a postulate, if you wish to put it that way. And we see this clearly. Then top dog and senior man to all of the matter there is, to every condition there is, and to everything that there is, was an idea. Fantastically true that there was an idea, a consideration. And above the idea, we have the Thetan in a native state. And when a Thetan wishes to return to a native state, he very often bungles it by simply assuming in the shape he is in that he is now in his native state. And we get this complete idiocy then that everything which is true as far as the native state of a Thetan, each one of these things is the thing which continues most persistently to be dramatized clear to the bottom of a barrel. And that every aberration is a reflection of one of two things. First, native state, and second, the first and second postulate theory. So we have the native state of a Thetan, before he's made any postulates, to be no idea. Horrible. His first postulate, then, his very first postulate, is unfortunately, in this instance, his native state. He says he has no idea, so now he says he's going to have an idea. And we get axiom 36. The first postulate and the second postulate, where the second postulate is given power by the existence of the first postulate. In this particular case, there's the native state of the Thetan. No idea. He doesn't have to have an articulated idea. He just is. And the truth of the matter is that he doesn't have any idea. And the idea of having no idea will run out ever having had an idea. Because the second postulate, which is, that is the idea, depends for its force and power upon the first condition that he didn't have an idea. But his native state is that he has every idea that ever existed any place at any time. And to have any game, he has to limit this condition. So he makes the first postulate. He says, I have no idea. And then he says, now I have an idea. Let's look this over. Let's be much more articulate now. Native state of Thetan. Knows all, sees all, strictly swami. Knows everything that's going to happen, has happened, will happen, could happen, couldn't happen, and all of its interrelationships of whatever kind and characteristic. Native state. He doesn't have any ideas. Because he has all the ideas there are. And if he has all the ideas there are, in order to get a specific idea, he would now have to say that he didn't have the idea before he gets the idea. And now he can say, I have an idea. But he has to assume first that he didn't have one. Do you see that clearly?
Yeah.
And the force of the idea is the statement that he didn't have an idea. The first postulate, then, is giving driving power to the second postulate. The second postulate is a harmonic on the native state, but it is changed, so it then persists, and we get time. An idea is actually a barrier. It's actually a stop on the track. An idea as a thing, it's actually a stop on the track. It's halt. Whoa. Even the idea, I am the most brilliant man on earth, is a stop on the track. And we see this in pre-clears all the time. We start running out a few of their wins, which is to say, we start capping some of their more interesting communication postulates. Well, I've seen all there is to see now. And we start auditing this pre-clear. He's stone blind. And we go back to this terrific win when he decided, got this idea that he'd seen everything there was to see. All right. The German. The American. Going in for an awful lot of heavy mass these last centuries. Awful lot of heavy mass. Machines. Masses. The British have somehow come out of it. You would be surprised. Then in Great Britain, a century ago, a man was fired for finding out how to build a brass fitting for a railroad coach which had more strength and less weight. He found out that you could build it hollow, and he actually invented at that time hollow brass tubing. Perfectly workable and usable, and the stress of it was perfect. And he was discharged from his job because it would be dishonest not to make it as heavy as possible. So we've sort of come upscale to that degree. We're starting to make things a little lighter, a little smaller, a little more compact, usable. Germany has never entirely learned the lesson, and the United States is just on the descent into finding this lesson. They're getting things awful heavy. Awful heavy. It takes more mass, you know. For instance, we have to go to Italy or England to find a tiny, workable, portable typewriter. Germany is also beginning to learn this. They're building tinier, lighter, more workable cameras. They started in with the Leica, but that's only one symptom of the entire economy. We've got this idea, and it gets solider and solider and solider. Now, how the devil does it get that solid? Because it is change, 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 lie, lie, lie. That wall could be simply this postulate. There's a solid wall there. But by evolution, it gets there this way. See, there's two ways it could happen. You could just simply say wall, and there's a wall. You could say, wall, Joe, do you agree there's a wall there? He says, yeah, there's sure a solid wall there. And boy, you got a wall. See? Nothing to it. The other way is by evolution. We let it sneak up on us. By continuing this idea that there is a wall there with a little disagreement about it. And a tremendous, now let's get over to the other side, amount of knowingness building up about the characteristics of that wall. And it builds up to the point where we even get a nuclear physicist who is a total expert on the characteristics of the matter in that wall. You talk about adding something to something. Well, that is it. What additive characteristics we place on the wall are each one alterations of the character of the wall, and so bring about greater persistence and more solidity increasingly on and on and on. So we can evolve a wall into existence simply by saying, I don't know how to get a wall there. I don't know anything about the wall. Looks like there's a wall there. I think I know there's a wall there. Joe, do you see a wall there? Well, I know there's a wall there. I just found it out. Lie, 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 lie. Native state of a thetan, no solidity. So he's already postulated a lie that a wall can exist. And so he eventually gets very convinced about the whole thing. Now let's look at the first and second postulate very rapidly without getting too complicated about this, because it's not a complicated subject, really. It's just kind of idiotic. And the subject starts with this. Native state. No. He knows everything there is to know without any action connected with it or evaluation because of it or having to look to discover it. He just knows it. And now he says, I don't know something. He says, I don't know what's over there. At once, he has made some space and probably put something there. And he says, oh, that's matter. Sure is. It's a lead pipe cinch that there's going to be something there. And not only that, that it's going to begin its persistence. So he wants to study it further. Now get this as a lying reaction. See, if the lie change. That isn't the condition, but he's saying it's the condition across the bridge of I don't know what the condition is. Because at any time, he could even know that he was going to do this. You see? But he shuts all that off, and he investigates this piece of matter. And he says, well, what do you know? Isn't that interesting? Isn't that fascinating? And you open it up, and look at what jumps out of it. Well, it couldn't have been anything jumped out of it unless he put something into it to jump out of it when he opened it up. Native state, knows all, has all the ideas there are. But he doesn't have an idea. Knows all there is to know. But he doesn't have a specific knowingness about this thing as a singularity of knowingness. Do you see that? So he has to say that he has no idea before he gets an idea. And he has to say that he doesn't know before he invents something to know. And so we get native state, first postulate, and second postulate. Now we're going to learn a lot about these things. We're going to have a lot to do with these things. We're going to have a lot to do with them, not because I dreamed them up, but because evidence is overwhelmingly in favor that this is the case. As incomprehensibly stupid as this might seem, it is nevertheless the case that it goes total knowingness, first postulate, second postulate. Total ideas, no idea, an idea. That's the way it goes. And if you know that's the way it goes, you cross the bridge of I don't know and no idea. And for the first time in the history of this race, it becomes safe to know something. And never in the history
of man has it ever been safe to know anything until this moment of Scientology. Of course, somebody else could have known all this technology and simply as-ised it all and taken off, you see? But then it's not in the history of this race. It was not safe to know a thing because you would stick to it. Because every secret or mystery could then pull you into it. And the more you knew about it, the more closely you were enveloped by it. And we have the manifestations of a Thetan's blackness. We have all the characteristics of havingness and difficulties with it. And we actually have illnesses. I'll give you an example. What man is sicker than that man who knows all about the illness he has? He knew all about it in the first place, and then he had to say, I don't know about it, in order to know something about it, and on the second postulate basis, which remember is solid, it sticks, it persists, he now knows an enormous number of things, and those things he knows are the thing. And it has no other actuality than the things he knows about it. If we stopped studying nuclear physics tomorrow, there would be no more plutonium. But if we studied it hard enough and long enough, we would get some. That's an interesting fact. A very interesting fact. You could subject this to all kinds of proof. Do you know that a lot of us could put our heads together and start studying money to a point where the street was paved with gold pieces and pound notes? You'd sure bring it into actuality. Now, here's education at work. You see, we thought the bridge resulted because bridges always were. And then we trained somebody to build bridges because bridges always were, and bridges would continue to result. That isn't the case. Bridges came into action because we trained somebody about bridges. That's all. Not even because we built them. We just trained somebody right down to the last rivet. Thing didn't even have any rivets in it. We taught people about rivets. Every once in a while, somebody picks up something going to parascientology, like a flying saucer, and it's got no division points in its metal anywhere. Well, just nobody got around to educating their technicians into a point where they had to have rivets. It's a great curiosity. Do you see how all this could follow sort of after the fact? Do you understand? Scientology has been, by and large, a safe subject. It has been a safe subject because it was always progressing toward a finer simplicity. And because it did not, at any time, totally pretend that it embraced all the knowingness there was any place, and does not at this moment pretend that it does. But I'll tell you something it does say at this moment. There's an unlimited amount of knowingness. You couldn't possibly run out of knowingness. But more fortunately for all of us, there's also an unlimited amount of unknowingness. That's what gets scarce, and that is the whole trick of processing. Ideas get scarce. You know what gets scarce? No ideas get scarce. Get this carefully. We don't spend any time postulating the no idea before we go on to acquiring ideas. We just set it up as automatic.
We just say, I'm stupid.
We don't usually bother to say before we get an idea, now let's see, I have no idea what is going on in that house. Let me see if I can get an idea of what's going on in the house. See, that would be the exact way to set it up. You would assume native state, then assume not knowingness, then assume there was something to know, and you'd have it. And you'd never get in trouble. Because you're always supplying yourself with lots of no idea. Now get that no idea as a thing, as an object, as a somethingness all by itself, as a trick, as a specialized consideration. We start to run short of this. And we keep on getting ideas, 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 but not over the bridge of no idea. And we keep using old no ideas in order to get new ideas. And the next thing you know, our new ideas jam into the existing no idea, which becomes so precious that we interiorize into it. We've neglected the first postulate. It's the only thing that had any power. It was the powerful thing sitting there. It was the thing that had the punch in it. Horrible, but true. It wasn't the first barrier. It's simply the powerhouse. And we just neglect it. We let it go automatic. And into it we swing, and the writer runs out of ideas and communism and dense dialectic materialism. Science says it's all been thought of before. It's all nonsense. Couldn't have all been thought of before, basically and philosophically, because there was no before. They're dramatizing no idea, don't you see? They're stuck in a dramatization of this postulate. And being stuck in that dramatization, they, of course, have lost the volitional ability to then postulate an idea into existence. See, they're trying to still make that first postulate, but they're not making the first postulate, so the first postulate's making them, and the first postulate is no idea. Now, you'll see this work out. The most remarkable and fantastic thing in the world is that this thing can be understood and embraced by the principles of ARC without liability. It can be embraced without liability. Never could before, believe me. You had to know the exact anatomy of where we were going before we really dared put a foot forward. And we have been very adventurous people, let me assure you. Look where psychology went. It got stuck on the thing called a brain. Yeah? Their entire concentration on this thing called a brain is the most fabulous thing you ever heard of. A brain doesn't think. It couldn't possibly think. That stove doesn't think. And yet everybody in psychology says the brain thinks this way and that way. How silly can you get? They're simply stuck on this thing, a something that's called the brain, and they're now going on investigating it. Oh, no. You not only dream the thing up, I'm sure the head was probably filled with air or cabbages before psychology. To show you these things changed, the Greek was absolutely certain that the center of thinkingness was in the stomach. He didn't have any truck with the head at all. And that wasn't because he was all interiorized into the GE. He could sit out there someplace and inspect the body and realize that there was an emanation of some kind of thinkingness from the stomach, and so he says, oh, that's where everybody thinks, and he skipped it. It's an idiocy to name studies of the mind really after Greek and Latin, because we're just not paying any attention to those at all. We have invented the brain. Most gorgeous thing you ever saw in your life. Now, if you've ever known anybody who was involved in a construction of adding machines or huge, giant electronic computers, or if you care to make this experiment, you will discover that it's very hard to drag him away from his work. The more computer he assigns to that machine, the more he gets sticky on the subject of the machine. Until he will at last tell you, quite frankly, that the human brain is too subject to error to even be used. The thing you want to use
is that huge computer over there. That's what does the thinking, and that does accurate thinking, until a whole society could gather around and share a one unit thinkingness, which then does all the thinking for everybody. There are such societies in this universe at this time. There have been such societies. You see, where everybody built a big machine, you know. Here's this huge machine. Everybody says, that does all thinking. The next thing you know, I guess they all get stuck in it. Now, you see how this could work. We know now, fortunately, by theory, which was evolved out of my observations on the subject. The theory was evolved out of the observation and confirmed by the workability of the processes resulting, that we have an arrangement of this character at work, which is evidently the basic and almost final arrangement as far as theory can go, because we have hit the I don't know, which up to modern times have blocked all actual knowingness about the mind. People went just so far in the direction of a study of the mind, and they went, no, 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 and they would no more, and no more, and no more, and no more about the whole thing, and never really postulate any I don't knows. And they would have themselves stuck in the most gorgeous barrier you ever saw, the second postulate. They wouldn't be in a native state. They would be across that bridge of I don't know in the second postulate. And when they'd back up off the second postulate, they would go into a blank out. So when they exteriorize from a life, they have forgotten all about the life. It's gone. Guess where they are now? They're in a third postulate. Now I'll give you the postulates in order. Native state, knows all, total ideas, total potentialities. First postulate, I don't know. I have no idea. Second postulate. I know I have an idea. It's I know something, you see. I have an idea. Third postulate, which is a harmonic on the first postulate, and therefore something that has considerable horsepower, because the horsepower is the first postulate. Of course, it's a thetan in the native state, but it's a thetan in the native state, you see, making a first postulate. And that isn't even a lie. He can make one idea, see, without contradicting himself too much, because that's true too. It's only when he contradicts that particular idea that he gets a lie and gets persistence. He says, I don't know, and then he says, I know. He says, I know sequitur to I don't know. See, so that's a lie. Therefore, now get what he does. The third postulate has got a harmonic of power on the first postulate. It's as though we were running flows and ridges, you see. Later on in mechanics, these things express themselves as alternate flows and ridges. A first postulate harmonic would be a flow, and a second postulate would be a ridge. All right. Third postulate is not ising the knowingness. He said, this knowingness which I have just achieved, I now do not have. Boy, is that a lie. He says, I've forgotten it. I still have it, but I have forgotten it. I have not as-ised it, since it would cease entirely. I have not ised it. I have said that as far as now, merely succeeding the point when I had it, it does not exist. See, he not ises it, and he gets forget. And now the next step is remember, which is an alter isness of a not isness. And that's the fourth postulate. Remembering is alter ising not isness. Now, if you've got any idea of the consequences of altering things, you know you get a persistence. If you not is them, you get a persistence. So you've got a persistence of a persistence at work here when you've got memory. And so, of course, you get mental ridges and facsimiles and chunks of energy flying around on the subject of thought if you're always forgetting and remembering.
because the use of either one is the use of an alteration of magnitude. And that's what's wrong with minds and what's wrong with patents. So let's get this now. Native state, first postulate, second postulate, third postulate, fourth postulate. Very important to us, it runs in this fashion. Native state knows all, first postulate, I don't know, second postulate, I know something, third postulate, forget it, fourth postulate, remember it. 1, 2, 3, 4, and that is the order of thought. Out of which comes any solidity of which we have any cognizance, except that solidity which is simply postulated to exist and persist. You see, we could have that kind of solidity too. But most of our solidities are evolved solidities. And spaces. Now you wonder why all this space exists in this universe and why it continues to exist. Well, that's an easy thing to do. All we've got to do is come down scale to looking as a dramatization of knowing, and we'll continue to have an automatic space, which, however, sooner or later folds up on people, simply because they've set it on automatic, and so we get condensed spaces, so we get figure-figure and all sorts of things. But that's just carrying it on down the track into trivial complexities, which we're not interested in looking at right now. We're looking at this high echelon, which is right up here, right close to the top, and a very, very easy thing to understand. And that thing simply is native state, first postulate, second postulate, third postulate, and fourth postulate. Now, this trick I discovered some time ago and first bird-dogged to it by this oddity, that something you wouldn't mind forgetting was tremendously more powerful than something you wouldn't mind remembering. You could sit there by the hour with no variation and make a case much, much better if you'd simply ask him something you wouldn't mind forgetting, something you wouldn't mind forgetting, something you wouldn't mind forgetting, something you wouldn't mind forgetting. But remembering bogged somewhere along the line. Sooner or later, remembering techniques bogged. I found that out about 6-8 months ago, rather thoroughly. Explored it and said, isn't that a wild datum? Now, if we'd been studying in the field of psychology, we simply would have thrown it aside as not in agreement with our theories. It's a dirty crack, but it isn't put in there as a crack. I mean, that is actually what we would have done with it. We would have discarded the random data. And believe me, we didn't discard that one. We found a wild variable. Why should this occur? And on further studies of persistence, they evolved from a different quarter, axiom 36, which has to do with the persistence of the second postulate by reason of the power in the first postulate. So you only have to take out the first postulate in order to remove any effectiveness of the second postulate. Now, there were two random data, you might say. One theory, which evidently was quite true, quite workable. And we looked this picture over, and we found very neatly that there was something wrong with knowingness. There was something wrong with knowingness. Here we were running the science of knowing how to know, and with that very science, we had discovered this considerable oddity. Everybody knows that knowingness is good. That is the one thing we all know. We all know that thoroughly. Well, then why should a person come a cropper at all because of a study of such a thing as mysticism? And yet they would come croppers because they studied mysticism. Every now and then we look around and here was someone who was head over heels after a lifetime of study. Well, we'd say, well, the data that he was studying was wrong. And I'm afraid that wasn't an accurate statement. You know what was wrong? He was studying. This is a horrible invalidation of Scientology and its studies and researches, isn't it, to discover that there is something wrong about knowingness? And to suspect, then,
something else. And the first suspicion is mirrored, actually, in the dichotomy, know and not know, as used some years ago. But there wasn't any observation at that time that not know was better than know. No observation. We just simply treated it as the positive and negative sides of the poem. The next observation came out of mystery. We found there was a point on the track called mystery. And this, later on, and just a few months ago, became secrets. But this still didn't express it. The actual expression of it is, don't know. Not knowing this, apparently at first glance, was the only salvation to prevent interiorization into bodies of knowledge or solid objects. As long as you didn't know about them, you were safe. Well, I made a random observation a few months ago, which was quite interesting. But I'll give you an example of it. You realize that over there, a mile or two, there's a bus running. Doesn't affect you, does it? Until you knew there was a bus running over there. And then you probably got a picture of it or something. You get the trick? Now, in the other direction, there's undoubtedly a taxi cab running. You got it? You got it? But before we did that, you didn't have any interest in it at all. Now, there could be another trick, but I have never studied how to work it out exactly, whereby you'd say, I don't know what is standing right here. Just say that. I don't know what's standing right here. Now invent something to stand there. Got it? Now just remember that it was you that said you didn't know it was there. And that I suggested it. Unless you're having a lot of difficulty with this, it just should have gone away. Got it? Yeah. It was the I don't know which put the real power in there. And so you must be going all the time on an automatic assumption that you don't know about buses and don't know about taxicabs. Because we did not make that statement before we assumed the bus was there. And yet we sure got a bus, didn't we? We sure got a taxi cab, didn't we? See, so we must be running on an automatic, continuous assumption. To wit, I don't know. Otherwise the other one wouldn't work. But what's more important is the way this demonstrates itself in actual processing. The ratio is about 2 to 50 in terms of hours of effectiveness between running I don't know and running I know. Get that now. We run an I don't know process for 2 hours, and we will get, if we run it exactly right, we'll get more stable, permanent gain than we would get in 50 hours of I know. In a lower order of magnitude and much less important to us, we will get much more gain in a case on something you wouldn't mind forgetting than we would on something you wouldn't mind remembering. Although we would get some gain on knowing, we would get good gain on knowing. If we stacked up a couple of hundred hours of remember, we would have our pre-clear in bad shape. Just doing nothing but remember it and remember it and remember it and remember it. This tells us, by the way, by experiment, an experiment we can make, since all of this is just delineated experimentally, evolved experimentally, empirically, tested, looked at, and the theory looked at, in keeping with the rest of what we know, and we suddenly discover that this is evidently the way the pattern is, and that's all I'm telling you now. This is evidently the way the pattern is. We've got this. Remember telling us one of the most frightening things we ever heard of. Remembers telling us a fantastic thing. He's telling us for one reason or another, but psychoanalysis never worked in all of its years of existence. That it never produced one single, solitary, isolated result anywhere in its history. We, as auditors, accidentally come across the sudden resurgences and gains that they get in psychoanalysis, and we pass them by because we know them not to be stable. You know, the preacher suddenly says, gee, after that session, I just feel terrific, and he tells us all about this. You know, we pressed a button, and he just now feels wonderful, he feels terrific, and so on. We'll say, ooh, ding, ding, ding. How will he feel 3 days from now? And we know how he'll feel. He'll be scraping bottom. We've all had this happen. We've had somebody all of a sudden say, gee, boy, well, that's my case. That's right there. Yes, sir. I had never recalled before that my little sister raped my father at the age of 2. That's my case. I'm set now. I'm all set. And you say, fine. If you're a wise auditor, you just say, fine. Good. Well, I'm glad you're happy about the whole thing. And just hope to God he doesn't go out in the street and spin. It's one of these little resurgences. It would only be overlooked if you also overlooked checking up on all the cases you did. And if you never ran a checkup on any of these cases, why, then you would be able to sit in an office and feel like God himself, you know? You'd say, just look at that. He recalled his little sisters raping his father, and now he's well, and write a book on the subject, not go call him up the next day or send a boy around to find out if he was still alive. Now, these are hard words, but if anybody had ever bothered to do that, somebody long ago would have discovered that about the most destructive engagement that you could engage upon with a preclear or a patient or a human being would be to sit down and ask him to remember and remember and remember and remember and remember, because by God, you'd wind up with a solid ridge. And that's what a ridge is, the result of continuous remembering. So we know the anatomy of this thing called a ridge. We can as-is it in various ways simply by asking the fellow to recall all the times he remembered something. And then as-is the session we just gave him, and he'll come off without a ridge. This is experimentally true. A ridge will evaporate, but boy, that's a very arduous process, and we don't have to go into that. Because the horrors of it is we're still trying to solve remembering with remembering. Forgetting would do better, and forgetting would dissolve the ridge much faster. We just say, do you know anything you wouldn't mind forgetting? Is there anything in this room you wouldn't mind forgetting? The fellow said, oh, yes, 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 yes. Or, like somebody who's been trained in general semantics for years and years and years, well, now I don't think there's anything that I would like to forget. I have been trained on certain responses, and I have a use for all the memories I have. Boy, this guy is strictly ding, 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 here comes the wagon. How'd he get that way? By remembering, of course. All right, let's look it over then and discover if there is any experimental demonstration of the validity of the theory I've just propounded to you, which is the theory of postulates. Native state, first postulate, second postulate, third postulate, and fourth postulate. Is there any experimental proof of this? Yes, there is. We take any engram anybody's having any trouble with and see what we can do with it by asking him what he doesn't know about it. And if you have a session in progress, remember that now, if you have a session in progress and we're auditing, the engram will blow in minutes. Now, if you make a perfect duplicate of it, you'll reduce the preclear's havingness and upsetting. This is evidently the wrong way to go about it, a perfect duplicate, because it upsets the preclear. But this other method doesn't upset the preclear. He'll feel a little foggy if you do it too long and let him self-audit on it. It needs lots of acknowledgement and two-way communication.
His lab will feel a little foggy, but he sure won't have that engram. His fogginess will considerably decrease if we continue the process, but I'm just talking about one engram. Now, let's take the chap who has the chronic picture. Maybe you know of such a case.
He always has this picture, and he goes around and lets auditors audit it.
You ever run into one of these cases? They exist. Well, we ruin his little red wagon in a hurry. We say, tell me something you don't know about that picture. Well, that's good. That's fine. That's all right. Now, give me something else you don't know about that picture. Well, that's fine. That's real clever. You really don't know about that picture. All right, good. Give me something else you don't know about that picture. And then you all of a sudden say to you, oh, well, I do know exactly where I... You say, give me something else you don't know about that picture there. And now give me something the picture doesn't know about you, and something else the picture doesn't know about you, and something else the picture doesn't know about you. And he says, what picture are we talking about? The one that was sitting in front of your face. Well, just a minute, he says. I got it, he says. I got it. You'd have him mock it up if you wanted to. But it'll blow. All right, let's take these recalcitrant chronic somatics that have been giving us trouble in this preclear of that, and which for a long time we knew better than to process. Processing directly at a chronic somatic was disastrous. This was a random datum. Here we were supposed to be in the business of healing people, and we didn't dare address what was wrong with them. Now look at that as a random datum. And, of course, I kept all these things racked up, and sooner or later, out the bottom of the slot fell the answer, which I'm giving you now. You ask him what he knows about this, where it came from, and sometimes you will as is, or make a duplicate of it, and it will disappear, but that will be rare. Most of the time, all you're doing is compounding the felony of knowing about it, and he becomes more and more expert on the subject, and of course it has greater and greater actuality. And that's about all there is to it. So of course you didn't dare process with knowingness processes the chronic somatic. But you can with a not knowingness process. You can say, what don't you know about it? 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 What doesn't it know about you? What doesn't... Boom. Minor thing, boom. Fantastic. Of course, you get a case that's bad off, you've got to have a session in progress. Really have it in progress and have him being audited smoothly before you can do such a thing to him. Well, with the average case, you can get rid of things rather in a hurry. Ask somebody what he doesn't know about his glasses and he'll lose them. That's the first time we've been taking glasses off, isn't it, really? For keeps. All right. Remember this, however. On this theory, it does not say that not knowingness is the goal of anyone or Scientology. Remember that. Remember that we got here over an arduous many thousands of years of human speculation and 25 years of arduous research to come up to and come to grips with this little tiny principle that the road to beingness and livingness crossed this barrier of not knowingness. And therefore, we have learned how to know about not knowingness. And if you don't think that is a trick, try it, because we're really going to use that in our processing, and we're going to get some very, very heavy examples and some reality on how this works and how these postulates fit together. And these will be the first principles which I will be teaching you this week. Thank you.